Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. We're going to open by talking about a piece that I saw in National Catholic Register, and it has to do with women of Generation Z seeking silence, as bizarre as it is. Generation Z, so if you're looking at the categorization of ages and years and generations, it's tough to posit exactly when this is, but Generation Z would be considered the digital generation because they were born into a world completely digitized. The generation before them, the millennial generation, was born into a pre-internet world, and therefore pre-social media, pre-digital world. They were born into a world of communication, and then eventually at about 1988, 1989, the internet became ubiquitously available. And towards the late 90s into the 2000s, we see the smartphone era, and therefore the digital era, social media, really becomes popular and prolific. And it's into that milieu that Generation Z was born. And so they've actually never known and age and era without digital noise. What this piece in National Catholic Register is pointing out is that many women of Generation Z are headed to monasteries and convents, calling it their Vow of Silence Summer. Now, this started on TikTok apparently, but it's grown, and a young woman posted that she went to schedule another silent retreat with nuns this summer, and they were booked for three straight months. Now, what this is showing is perhaps the continued manifestation of the soul in crying out for peace and ultimately Christ as an anchor in the storm of information and digital noise. And so it's important that we explore that. We go on from there to speak with my friend Steve Ray. One of the ways in which we think about St. Peter is that we see him as a failed leader in some ways, and then eventually he rises up. But one thing Steve points out is that Peter possessed the capacities for being a brilliant administrator. In fact, Steve points out that he was the first CEO of the Catholic Church. He had all of those capacities for leading a large organization. This was a man who had a certain acumen for administration and for management. And Steve draws that out and points out to why Christ selected him amongst all the apostles to be the first in apostolic primacy, Petrine primacy, and therefore papal primacy. All this we talk about after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, July 29th. It's the feast of Saints Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. The Trump administration says it's okay for federal workers to promote their religious beliefs to colleagues, display religious items in the workplace, and to pray. That according to a Monday memo from the Office of Personnel Management. He calls for freedom of personal religious expression unless that expression imposes an undue hardship on operations. It also says that a worker can try to convince another of why their religious beliefs are wrong, but must stop if asked. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 already protects religious expression in the workplace. Pope Leo XIV says the use of artificial intelligence shouldn't be used to undermine the dignity of others. That was his message at a Mass for Catholic social media influencers during the Vatican's Jubilee of Youth. The Jubilee is held every 25 years and is a week-long gathering for Catholic youth, the Pope adding, "We have a duty to work together to develop a way of thinking that gives voice to love." The Vatican has expressed reservations about an alleged Marian apparition site in southern Italy. The alleged visionary claims he's received visions and messages from the Virgin Mary since 2009. And also claims to hear the voice of his deceased mother-in-law through his guardian angel. The Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith says private worship is permitted at the alleged apparition site, meaning small groups may visit, but pilgrimages and the celebration of Mass are not allowed there for now. Spirit Airlines is preparing for a smaller flight schedule, the airline carrier announcing plans to furlough 270 pilots this fall, as well as demote 140 pilots from captain to first officer. Spirit Airlines, emerging from Chapter 11 bankruptcy in March, but the industry is now facing weaker than expected demand for coach class tickets. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. A few years ago, Harvard University found that growing numbers of adults from Generation Z were identifying as Catholic. In the spring, waves of Generation Z converts flocked to the Catholic Church, and now this summer, silent retreats are proving popular. Beverly Willett, a retired New York City attorney and author of Disassembly Required, a memoir of midlife resurrection, joins us to talk about this. Beverly, it's great to speak with you. How are you?
Good to speak with you again. I'm great. We just had a thunderstorm here, but now it's all calm for a moment.
Well, I'm glad you're all well, and I'm glad that everything is calm. And speaking of calm and the need for silence, I can't say I'm surprised, but it's what's surprising to me, however, is how quickly this became a social media trend.
That's surprising to me, too. And thinking about it, I think I happened to see a mention, and I think it was in I don't read Vice on a regular basis, but sometimes I flip all over the place just to keep aware of the news. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I initially saw it. And I said, I want to go investigate this because I'm surprised. And here I was on TikTok. I don't usually go on TikTok. And it was really a revelation to me because I think some of these things that I see these young women investigating now, it took me midlife to come to this, to come to it.
I agree. In fact, if I'm being very honest, especially in my present state of life with young children, it's difficult to imagine being able to take a weekend off, let alone a day off, to go on a silent retreat. And yet it seems that these women of Generation Z are flocking to it and very quickly plummeting into the discipline of silence.
Right. And I think, you know, I was when I started investigating and looking at some of the research, you know, I mean, I remember having career burnout myself way back when, but it took a little bit longer. And so I was really curious when I saw that after COVID, so many of these young women in their 20s are experiencing burnout already. And I think it's true. I think there's so many demands made upon them in the workforce, with their peers, with technology, so many pressures coming from parents, coming from, for women, especially with, you know, you've got to have that career first and you've got to make it. So I think that they have a lot of pressures that some of the older generations didn't see.
Right.
And they're getting burned out, quicker.
You bring up a crucial point about the psychological context behind what women in Generation Z are facing, especially, you know, post-sexual revolution and then now the quote-unquote empowerment that feminism has given them. So a woman is being told by society to define themselves by material achievement, especially industrial achievement, you know, in the workforce, in the workplace. And at the same time, achieving a series of material checkboxes before their lives can be defined. It's no wonder that they are very quickly experiencing burnout. I mean, this is a 26-year-old that you highlight saying that she's been experiencing burnout for a long time. That's concerning, to say the least.
It is very concerning, and by the same token, and we see that, I think, when we see so many of the things that are happening, when we see the mental health difficulties. Mm-hmm. We see higher rates of suicide. We see so many things happening to these young people that we didn't see before because of the pressures that they're under. And I think, however, this is, for me, it felt really like hopeful news. And to actually talk to some of these young women and hear their stories and find that they were drawn to the silence and drawn to God. And it made me hopeful, quite frankly. When we're in the world and we see so much happening every day, you know, we just, like, it's almost easy to just say, let me give up. But to see that some of these young women are interested in this and drawn to it, that makes me feel very hopeful for this generation.
Beverly, that's a crucial point, and I'm glad you brought that up, because their peers are marked by continuous TikTok trends and constantly seeking the next like, the next follow on, especially TikTok as a platform. That's Generation Z's social media favorite platform. In the face of this, these young women, and quite a lot like them, it's become quite a trend, are seeking out these silent retreats to the point where retreat centers are being booked up 3 months in advance.
It is unbelievable, and I go to one in South Carolina, and I happen to just call them just to find out what's happening, and they're like, yes, we're booked. That's what they're telling me, too. And they have been seeing it in the last few years. Young women, lots of young women starting to come and book up at these retreats, which is generally you think, you know, it's older people who can take the time off, and that instead of going to the beach or dating or partying, they are choosing to do this. That is a very right. wise decision.
Right. This is a willful decision. And to quote one of the young women that you mention in your piece, there is your life before an 8-day retreat and your life after. So they're really acknowledging a massive transformative encounter with the Lord, who is not only the source of healing and life, but also inner peace.
Yes, and I think, too, you know, when you experience that, it's something that you want again. Like the other woman that I interviewed, Margot Tucker, mm-hmm. When, you know, she was very young when she went on the first one, and she was just, you know, wanting to be with friends. But then she kept finding herself sort of going back. And then as she got a little bit older, she was drawn. And so for her, it became that place where I know that's where I can go for refuge. And so that's good, because if you can get the peers influencing the other women to go, because I went on TikTok and I just wanted to see what these women were talking about. And some of them were going, no way, really? Tell me about it. So they are influenced by their peers and other women saying it was wonderful. Go.
Right. I want to invite you to comment. That's profound. And one of the things that I'm thinking of right this second is how much psychological stress, let's zoom in on these women, how much psychological stress they've been under, especially post-pandemic, and trying to pick up normalcy and pace of life after the, you know, the shutdowns of the pandemic and all the effects thereof.
I mean, that is absolutely true, and that is apparently one thing with what people have seen, mm-hmm. Is that the COVID pandemic really did have a profound influence on people. And I think maybe, I mean, I don't know, I'm sure we'll see more and more studies come out. But I think, too, I know it took me a while to learn probably what some of these women have seen with their own parents and older generations, and that is this looking for the grass is greener, or looking to, for material goods or something. Mm-hmm. And I think for them, they're realizing a lot quicker, I'm not satisfied with that. I'm
right.
not satisfied with that. I look at my parents, I see they're dissatisfied with that. And all of this, you know, this career and all these things I was told that was going to bring me peace and happiness, that's not happening. And so they're asking themselves, well, where is it? I need mm-hmm. to go away because I can't hear myself think. And so when they go away in silence, that, as Cardinal Sarah said, that is where we find God, and God is ready to meet them.
You know, Beverly, considering the promises of neo-atheism and secularism and feminism, and women are now reporting more stress and more loneliness and more anxiety than ever before, I guess in those ways it's not surprising that they're turning to the perennial wisdom and unshakable confidence of Christ and His church.
Yes, and I just saw another article that said that, you know, it was talking about the pilgrimage to Chart every year.
Mm-hmm.
And they said more and more, I mean, I forget how many tens of thousands were going on the walk. And those we're talking Gen Z again.
Well, Beverly, I want to say thank you very much for making the time to speak with us about this. This was an important topic.
Thank you very much.
My guest has been Beverly Willett, retired New York City attorney, author of Disassembly Required, a memoir of midlife resurrection. We've been talking about this trend, frankly, social media trend, but also cultural trend, amongst women of the Gen Z persuasion who are gravitating towards silent retreats, finding healing and solace in the presence of Christ. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Marcus Peter. Ave Maria Radio spearheads the proclamation of the gospel into all areas of society and culture. And so we want to invite you to think about what Catholic radio means for you. Because our towers and our equipment need updating. And we want to ask you to think about the impact of Catholic radio and how your donations can help continue the propagation of the gospel for the salvation of souls to all who hear it. Thank you for joining us on this wondrous mission.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mark Speter. I'm joined by my friend Steve Ray, apologist extraordinaire. We are talking about St. Peter not being the bumbling, incompetent leader that he's sometimes portrayed as, even in well-meaning shows. In fact, what Steve posits to us, which I believe is true, is that Peter was a brilliant administrator and businessman, so much so that when Christ named him leader amongst the apostles and therefore first pope, he was building upon his natural capacities already. Steve, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing very good, Marcus. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Always a joy. I greatly appreciate it whenever you make the time, especially to come down. And you brought with us some images, and before we get to that, why do you think in modernity we often see Peter portrayed as an ignorant, sometimes bumbling? They don't present him in the most flattering light on occasion.
Well, Peter was a boisterous guy. Mm-hmm. He was outspoken. He was the first, if there's an emergency, he'd be the first one to jump in and mm-hmm. help. I mean, he's this kind of a guy.
Right.
His brother Andrew, he's the quiet, silent type. You know, Peter, he's the opposite. But we also have, and I guess I have a list here of the things that we often hear about Peter. And obviously, the Gospels are not always flattering. Even Jesus said, "Get behind me, Satan." And yeah. That was right after he said, "You are rocking on this rock of
right.
my church." And then Peter. But I think Jesus loved Peter the most, even though we know John was the disciple whom he loved. I think he loved Peter because Peter was right out there in front saying, mm-hmm. "I love you, Lord. I'll die for you, Lord." He couldn't live up to it.
Yep, yep.
He oversold and underdelivered. but he said it. He meant it.
Yeah.
And whether he could live up to it. So he says, "Get thee behind me, Satan," because he said, "We're not going to let anybody touch you, Lord. We're going to take care of you and protect you." And Jesus says, "You're not thinking it. You don't understand the plan."
Right.
Then he refused to have Jesus wash his feet. I would have refused to have Jesus wash
yep.
my feet. I would have said, no, what are you doing? You're the Lord, you know.
Right.
That, but back in the 24 times it says in the Bible, washing feet, because when you're walking around that land, you always got camel dung between your toes. Mm-hmm. You know, when you come into a place, you have to wash your feet. So Jesus was going to wash it, but he was teaching a lesson. Peter says, well, then if it's not just my feet, all of me. And,
yes.
But Jesus said, you're already cleaned, all of you, and meaning that you've through baptism, but you still have to have your feet clean. And I reckon that to be like confession. You know?
Uh-huh,
we've already been baptized and cleansed, but we have to still get our feet washed once
in
a while. Confession. Peter fell asleep at the two main times. But then again, who did Jesus take with him when he went to these special events, like at the Mount of Transfiguration?
Right.
And he didn't bring all of them. He brought Peter, James, and John.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't even bring Peter's brother Andrew. He just brought Peter, James, and John, because these are the guys that he was the closest with. I think he liked those guys the most. And Jesus did like some better than others, let's face it, you know. And Peter fell asleep. Well, he was tired. I went up Mount of Transfiguration. I mean, we take our buses groups up there all the time, but I hiked up there one time. And when I got to the top, it took me 50 minutes to get up there. It's 1,900 feet. And it's steep. And I didn't take the road. I went right straight up the way they would have gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if I'd have gone up there and Jesus had kept me busy all the time, I'd probably have fallen asleep too.
Yeah.
You know, in the Garden of Gethsemane too.
Yeah, yeah.
So then there's that. And then there's he fell asleep at the Transfiguration. And he says, we should build three booths. And people think, well, that was stupid. And even says he didn't quite know what to say. But Pope Benedict said that that was during the time of the tabernacles,
mm-hmm.
and building booths was required by the law.
Right.
And so he was only saying, let's do what we're supposed to do while we're up here. He's the only guy that took the sword and cut Malchus's ear off in the Garden of Gethsemane. You know, he's defending Jesus.
Yep.
He's the guy with the sword. He's the one that walks out, whacky. He misses him, but he gets him, but he doesn't get him.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness he didn't get him the way he wanted to. He sank in the water. He didn't have enough faith. But he's the only one that tried.
Yep.
The other ones wouldn't have even tried it. He said, bid me to come out to you. And Jesus says, come out. And he got up, and he did walk.
Yeah.
And then he walked back all the way, too. Remember, Jesus took his hand, and he walked all the way. Nobody else even had the guts to get out of the boat.
That's right.
At least Peter did. He denied Jesus three times. He had his weaknesses, too. He is a weak man. But I think in the midst of all of that, he was a bold guy who loved Jesus and was quite ready to express it and to act upon it, though he failed at many times, like all of us do. But Jesus saw something in him that he liked. There's a saying, I think it's Thomas Aquinas uses it a lot, grace builds on nature.
Yeah.
You take what you naturally have, the natural talents, and you build on that. Jesus didn't pick an idiot to be the CEO. Jesus is starting the longest existing office, institution in the world. The papacy and the Catholic Church, there's nothing that has existed longer as an office than the Catholic Church. So Peter is being put in charge of the most significant office, the most significant chair and position of any human being ever, to be the head, call him the CEO of the church. He was the leader. When day of Pentecost, they didn't all stand up and talk. Peter stood up and talked. And in the book of Acts, you don't hear the voice of any other apostle except Paul, who comes later. But of the other 12, you never hear a word from them. Every word spoken is Peter. And he's the one given the new name. He's the one that's given the keys of the kingdom. He's the royal steward. So I think Jesus saw something in Peter and built on that. Let's face it, he's a businessman. Peter owned a fishing boat. That's not something that everybody did. He had business partners. That means he's a good businessman. He works well with others. They have sharing of income. They have to divvy out the taxes and the proceeds. They have to work together. I've run businesses. I still do, actually, but I started and run businesses, and you have to be a good businessman to have partners.
Yep.
Having a partner is difficult.
Yep.
But he had partners, Zebedee, James and John, his brother Andrew. They hired seasonal help. They had employees, but they would hire additional employees during the season.
That's where the scripture says the other men.
Yeah, and that he hired. It said that they hired, had employees, and they hired other men. He had a nice house. But back to the business part, though. We'll come back to the house later. In the business end of it, when after the Jesus rose from the dead, they went back up to Galilee. And where's Jesus? I don't know. He's just not around like he used to be. Well, what do you want to do? Peter says, I guess I'll go fishing. I'll go back to do what I used to do, mm-hmm. because we don't have any direction anymore. Right. Where's the master? Where's our rabbi? He's gone. He drops in once in a while, but he's he told us to come up here, but where is he? And then he says, I'm going to go fishing. Well, whose boats did he go fishing in?
Right.
We're told that he walked away.
Uh-huh.
But he still is business. He didn't just walk away from the business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced as a businessman myself that he would have had Zebedee made arrangements for Zebedee and some of the other employees to keep the business running.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Europe one time and I had my business and I kept it running while I was in Europe. It was a small business, but I kept it running and I still had a check coming every month from my company. And when I came back, I split it with the guy who ran it with me. I was a business partner guy. And so when I came back, I still had my business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when Peter came back, that his boats were still there. He didn't just go out and rent a boat from a boat rental company. I think his boat was there, and he just went in his own boat, and they went out fishing again.
Right.
Which meant his business was still there. He was a competent businessman.
Right. A clever administrator, which is something we take for granted.
And now, Jesus saw that because he's appointing him to do what? To administer
the
big corporation he's starting.
Right. And he knew Peter would have the vision for that. Now, you brought up two things that I want to make sure we touch on one of them. We're running out of time, so we'll start now. And that's that it's easy to think Peter made mistakes, but then, like you mentioned, we would have made those exact same mistakes.
Right. And the others did too. And they didn't even have the oomph to get up and do those things.
Mm.
Only a rolling stone can go in the wrong direction, right? If your stone's just sitting there, it's not going to go anywhere.
Right, right.
And when I have employees, I don't have any anymore, thank God, but I used to have 600 at one time. I used to tell them, if you don't make any mistakes, you're of no value to me because it means you're not doing anything. I want you out there doing things, which means there are going to be made mistakes, but we'll learn from them.
Right.
Peter made mistakes, but Jesus saw the core value that this man had, and he built on it.
Right. My guest is Steve Ray. We're talking about, frankly, we're talking about the biblically accurate business acumen of Peter as a figure, and therefore the first CEO of the church, and why Christ picked him to be our first pope. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Hi, I'm Father Chris Alar of the Marian Fathers of the Immaculate Conception. My new book, Understanding the Sacraments, unpacks the extraordinary gifts unique to the Catholic Church. Ever wonder why we baptize infants? Is confession in the Bible? And must wives be subordinate to their husbands? The answers to these more hot-button questions about the sacraments are on sale now from Marian Press at shopmercy.org. God bless you.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Remember to take a moment this week to thank a priest you know for all the blessings he shares through his vocation. Our priests work tirelessly to bring us the sacraments and help us on our journey to heaven. Let's encourage them and express our gratitude for all their sacrifices, saying something like, "Thank you for baptizing our children." Nominate your priest at thankyouforyourpriesthood.com. A new contest every month through September 2025, brought to you by Diocesan, your Catholic advertising and communications company.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Pete. I'm speaking with Steve Ray. He's an apologist, author, pilgrimage leader, which, by the way, Steve is now leading pilgrimages to the Holy Land again, Joy of Joys. And I mean this sincerely. Consider going to the Holy Land with him. No two pilgrimages are similar, and you won't... This is overselling it, you're my friend, but the truth of the matter is I don't think you'll find a better pilgrimage than going with Steve Ray to the Holy Land.
We're going to go over Christmas. We got people who said we're going to go no matter what, and I said if I can get a group of people to go, I'll definitely take them, because we could visit all the holy sites right now and you'd never know there was any issue. And the only difference would be there's no lines or crowds.
It's so great.
So, and we'd visit these places related to Peter. That's what's good about it.
That's what I wanted to bring up. You know, before we get there, you brought up something in the last segment, Steve, that I really think is important. You mentioned how Jesus saw Peter as a favorite, which brings up the reality that God favors each of us differently, and that's a biblical reality.
Well, he did. The Gospels say the one whom Jesus loved. Mm-hmm. That was John. We are sure that's John. And he chose Peter to be the rock. Mm-hmm. The day that he met Peter, John chapter 1, verse 42, he met him, and I just see that Andrew brings in, he says, "Look at Simon. I found Jesus. He's the Messiah." And Jesus looks at him and says, "Oh, you're going to be called Cephas." And Peter actually said, "What are you talking about? I'm going to be called Cephas. There's nobody named Cephas in my family." But Jesus knew right from the beginning he was going to choose him. He didn't choose John, whom he loved. He chose Peter. And whenever you see a list of the apostles, you kind of get the idea of Jesus's kind of categories too. And always it's Judas Iscariot. It's the last one.
That's right.
But and it also says that he loved Martha, Lazarus, and Mary. Mm. He would go there because he loved them.
Mm-hmm.
He loved everybody, but he's a human being as well. He had friends. He had people he enjoyed. You know, you can love someone and not like them, and not like to be around them a lot, and yet you'd still love them and do anything to help them. So I think Jesus said that. He had a human heart as well.
Right.
We'll talk about his heart, you know, again later. But another thing about business, and then we'll jump to his house.
Sure.
Which this is a talk that Legatus asked me to give. Steve Henley asked me one time to do it at the for the big summit. The big summit. And I gave this as the keynote talk about Peter being a businessman. And I said at the time, if Peter had been alive today, he'd be a member of Legatus, which is a business. Organization that Tom Monahan started, for those who don't know. But the I showed you this picture. I hope that you can put it up there. You can see the map. This Bethsaida is at the north tip of the Sea of Galilee. Mm-hmm. That's where the mouth of the Jordan River comes in. And we know from Gospels that Peter and Andrew and Philip were born and grew up in Bethsaida.
Mm-hmm.
And that means house of the fishermen. And that's where they learned to fish.
Right.
And I wrote a whole story. I don't have time to read it here about the boys watching their father coming in, and they would help him sort the fish. And I've seen them do that in the morning. If you go there now, you'll watch them sort the fish. And the refrigerator trucks are there. They load them in and take them off to sell them at the market. But the they would watch their father, and they would learn the trade, and it was exciting to them. Their father would show them how to clean nets, how to catch fish, do all these things. And so then they would start their own business when their father was older. They grew up and they started their own. But when you lived in Bethsaida, you had to go to Magdala, which is down on the other by right. Tiberias. That's where the fish was processed.
Mm.
That's where they smoked the fish. They you know, salted it, prepared it, because you know what happens if you have a fish and you just leave it on your counter mm-hmm. for 2 days, the whole house stinks. and fish have to be prepared quickly, otherwise they get stinky real fast.
Right.
And so they would have to get their catch of fish down to Magdala, which is where we get the name Mary Magdalene. That's where she's from. Mary Magdalene is not her last name. It's Mary from Magdala.
Yeah.
And it was a big city down there, and it was known. Even there's writings from Roman historians that mention the fish that was prepared and smoked and salted in Magdala. They had that fish even in Rome. So the way it would seem is that Peter and Andrew had to take the fish to Magdala, but in doing so, they had to cross into another province mm-hmm. because there was the two provinces. When King Herod died, he split it between his sons. Capernaum is the line where the provinces
right.
changed. So you had King Herod Agrippa, who was south of that, and King Herod Philip, who had the province north where Bethsaida was. They had to cross that line, and they're no dummies. They said, look, every time we go through that, we have to pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
We have to pay tax on our fish. We have to pay tax on us. And they, just like anybody else, they try to reduce the tax burden that they have. So they said, let's move to Capernaum, because who's sitting right there at the gate of Capernaum? It's called the Via Maris, the way by the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes all the way up to Damascus, and it goes all the way down to Egypt, that road that was a main road, which is why Jesus chose Capernaum, by the way, because that could get the message out faster, because it's right on the main road, the Via Maris. So Jesus, they come here, and guess who's sitting at the gate of Capernaum? It's the IRS agent. It's Matthew. Matthew had his tax booth
right.
there. He would have been collecting taxes as they go back and forth. He was the one that collected taxes. So Peter says, let's move to Capernaum. Then we don't have to cross the line between provinces. And we'll save a whole lot of money on taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a good, astute businessman. So that's just a little bit about that. Now, do we have another segment after this, too? Or is this...
Oh, yeah, we do.
Okay, good. So let's talk about the house then.
Okay.
But this gives you an idea of Peter's business acumen
mm-hmm.
and owning ships and having them on the harbor and knowing how to fish, having employees. The guy is a good businessman.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus wants somebody who's going to run the church who has those kind of capabilities.
Right.
Now, of course, he could use anybody he wants, but... would you choose just anybody to be the who's going to stand up on the day of Pentecost, who's going to administer it, who's going to establish the chair in Rome, who's going to... This is the guy who Jesus obviously trusted. And he put him through the ringer, didn't he?
Yeah.
When Peter denied Jesus, it's a Peter and Gallicantu. That means where the cock crowed. That's a mm-hmm. church right on the side of the Mount Zion there. And I always say to people, and it was here that he denied Jesus, and can you imagine, it says in Luke that Jesus turned and looked at Peter.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that look? You just melt under that look, under that gaze of Jesus. I told you you'd deny me, and you did. But these were all character-building experiences, too. And Peter, even in John 21, when Jesus said, do you love me? He used the word agape. Do you have self-sacrificial love for me, Peter? And Peter says, Lord, you know... He used the word phileo. You know I'm your friend.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to oversell himself anymore and say, I'll die for you, I'll die for
right,
you. But
right.
he's a guy who knows how to learn his lesson. And he's saying, I'm going to say phileo. I love you as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot oversell myself anymore. I've learned that. But he did end up saying agape in Rome when he died and was crucified upside down.
That's right.
Then he did finally say, I do agape you. But even... in that case, Jesus picked a man, I think, who he knew had good business acumen and who would have good instincts. And then he would, of course, by the Holy Spirit, build on that. Build on that.
So we've got about a minute left in the segment. Just very quickly, I know our listeners can't see the pictures. We'll upload these. But can you describe Peter's house in location to the sea and the synagogue?
Yeah, and we'll do that as a setup for the next time. Mm-hmm. Because the next part of this, why I think that Peter was a good businessman and a civic leader in his community, is because of the location of his house. Mm-hmm. We know where his house is. The Franciscans did the archaeology. I think his name is Corbo, and there's a church now over the house, and it has a glass floor. Mm. So when we have Mass there, this is the place, by the way, where Jesus said, "Eat my flesh and drink my blood." Mm-hmm. He said that in these words he spoke in the synagogue in Capernaum.
Yeah.
And the house is right next door to the synagogue. And they know it is because the early Christians came there to pray. They wrote graffiti, and over time, they built a chapel there to pray.
Yeah.
And that was the only sacred place in the whole of Capernaum, and they knew that that was where Jesus had lived. Because Jesus, he called that his home. Jesus came back home to Capernaum.
Right.
And where was home? He lived with Peter.
Peter, yeah.
He didn't own his own house. He lived with Peter. That was his home base. That was his office for 3 years when he was in Galilee. When he went to Jerusalem, he stayed with Lazarus, Mary, and Martha. So he had two home bases.
Right.
Capernaum was. He lived in that house with Peter, and we'll come back and talk about that house when we get back.
I'm talking with Steve Ray, who's a master of pilgrimages to the Holy Land, and therefore Holy Land geography. He's also an apologist, an author, pilgrimage leader. We've been talking about Peter as a CEO, a man of brilliant business acumen, and the fact that Jesus stayed in Peter's house when they were in Capernaum. Stay tuned, I'm Ox Peter.
For over 40 years, Leader Business in Ann Arbor has delivered top-quality copiers, printers, scanners, and software solutions, all backed by expert service. Rooted in faith and integrity, they ensure your operations run smoothly with fast response times and proactive maintenance. Join the many Catholic-owned organizations that trust Leader Business. Visit leaderbusiness.com or call 734-253-2534. Leader Business. Equip. Serve. Support.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Hi, I'm Dr. Marcus Peter, host of Ave Maria in the Afternoon and Unveiling the Covenant. Ave Maria Radio has been at the forefront of dialoguing faith at the intersection of all things pertaining to human flourishing. We need your help. Our infrastructure is in urgent need of updating. We want to ask you to support us in this summer campaign. Every gift, no matter how big or small, will be useful to bringing the gospel to the ends of the earth. Thank you. You are broadcasting hope with us.
Ron Finn here, inviting you to join Dave Basharis, Pat Odie Murray, and me for Morning Offering, the Catholic way to start your day.
We welcome some very special guests each day, including Teresa Tamio, Andrew Reinhardt, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and Matthew Archbold. Plus, my chat with Pat, talking with Catholic experts from all over.
Plus, we're having fun along the way, so you can start your day with a smile. Morning Offering, weekday mornings at 8, here on the Ave Maria Radio family of stations.
Who and what make up the Communion of Saints? According to the Catholic Catechism, the Communion of Saints that forms one church is composed of the faithful in heaven, the faithful expiating their sins in purgatory, and those still walking their earthly journey. The Catechism says there is a perennial link of charity that exists between the three groups. The holiness of one profits others much more than the sins of one can cause harm to others. The spiritual goods of the Communion of Saints is called the treasury of the Church. It is made up of the infinite value of the merits of Christ the Redeemer, which can never be exhausted before the Father. The prayers, the immense and unfathomable good works of the Blessed Mother, and the prayers and good works of all the saints. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
You're listening to Ave Maria Radio.
Ave Maria Radio.
Honey, did you ever call Mighty Dog Roofing of Ann Arbor for that free roof inspection?
I knew I forgot something.
Roof leaks can cause mold buildup or even roof collapse. Protect your family today by calling local Catholic Dan and Mary Flanagan at Mighty Dog Roofing for a free inspection of your roof, siding, or windows. Mighty Dog Roofing, 734-224-4916. That's 734-224-4916.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm talking with Steve Ray about the figure of Peter. We're going to explore Peter's house. The fact of the matter, the premise of these conversations is that Peter was selected by Christ to be the first pope because he had tremendous business acumen. So Steve's article, which will be linked in the description of today's program, is called St. Peter, CEO of the Catholic Church. And you can find the article on Catholic.com. In fact, if you go on Catholic.com, type in CEO, it's going to be the first thing that pops up. So, yep. Steve, go ahead.
It's please. An article in Catholic Answers magazine. They published it about a month ago.
Right.
And so that's where, I guess you saw it or I mentioned it to you, and that's why I'm here now, because of this article that I wrote.
Well, I definitely saw it, and I'm really glad to be able to speak about this, because you're also teaching me about Holy Land geography. It's easy for me to read the scriptures and to learn from books, but you have visualizations of what happened. So tell us about the house, the things that we just can't know without finding out about these.
Okay, Capernaum is a very tight-knit city. It's the people didn't have big houses. About 1,500 people live there. 1,500 to 2,000 people live there. It's on roughly 15 acres, if I remember right. It's not a big area. Mm-hmm. Even now, it's not all been excavated, but it was a good-sized city. It was a fishing village. It had a harbor, and the boats would come into that harbor. You can still, when you go visit Capernaum, you can go walk on the water there, and you can see where the boats came in. Now, what's significant about this is where Peter's house is located.
Right.
Because if his house was just a small one on the outskirts of town, that's one thing. But his house is right next door to the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
He stepped out of his door, and he'd go right down to the boats. Now, that's significant,
right?
Since it's a fishing town. He owned real estate right on the water with the harbors. He may have owned part of the docks and the harbors there. And on the other side of his house is the synagogue. That's like living next door to the governor. So if you have a house that is right on the water, on the harbor, and you probably own part of that real estate there,
mm-hmm,
with your business, and on the other side, you go out the other side of your house, you go right into the synagogue, which is the center of life, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
The harbor is the center of the working life. That's where the fish are caught, brought in, sold, sent, shipped everywhere. Just on the other side is where the social life is. The religious life is in the synagogue, and Peter's house is right smack dab in the middle of that. Now, you don't have a house in between those two unless you are a businessman and you have money and you have some, maybe even a civic leader, maybe even some standing in the community,
right,
as a leader in the community. So this house is very significant. And in one passage in Gospel of Mark, it says that the whole town gathered together at the door of Peter's house. Now, I don't know a lot of people, if the whole town, and obviously it's an exaggeration. It doesn't mean all 1,500 of them, but it means a good percentage of them came to the front door of his house. Now, how many people even living in a subdivision could have half their subdivision come and stand in front of their house? Peter, because when you're standing in this archaeological site, you can still see the walls,
mm-hmm,
and the foundations. You see how it was very compact, made of basalt, volcanic rock.
Uh-huh.
And it was all very compact, and people didn't have big, huge houses like we know of today. And so for them to say that all the town, the whole village, the whole town came and stood at Peter's door means that he's got a pretty good front porch. He's got a pretty good expansive area in the front,
right,
which would have, again, indicated some kind of wealth, some kind of property ownership, so to speak. And Jesus was there. And remember the guy that was sick, they came up and they took the tile off the roof. And I showed you another picture here that I have, showed you what his compound probably looked like, two-story. And they
which is a big deal for back then, because most of the houses were smaller and they were single story.
Right, and this was Andrew and Peter would have lived together because families lived extended families. They still do extended families live together, and this would have been a family compound. Who did Jesus live with? How did he get introduced to the family? Peter's mother-in-law needed to be healed, so Jesus was there. There's a mother-in-law. Peter's there. Peter has Andrew. They would have lived together in the house. And so, and the way that is you got, it's the, these are all the rooms, the bedrooms, the living area, but everybody spent their time in the courtyard. That's where you'd do your cooking, in the courtyard all together. The kids and the family would all be together in the courtyard, and then you'd go off into these to do sleeping and other things. But he probably had a multi-story property. That's what this picture is, and it would have been a significant dwelling.
Right.
That I know that there's some, like in The Chosen, it shows him as kind of a young guy who can't pay his taxes, and he has to go work on the Sabbath in order to get enough. I just don't think that would fit Peter from what we know of him from the land.
There's a few things that I believe The Chosen doesn't nail when it comes to Peter. That's one. The second would be his age and in relation to the other apostles.
Yeah, you know, I have to admit, I haven't watched it. I've watched a couple, just the one on Peter when I was on an airplane, but I end up arguing with it.
Me too.
I'm sorry, because I'm there and I got my pretty good idea of what Peter was like and what Matthew was and what the land was like. And I love the way they portray Jesus. And you know, I don't want to get people to hate me because I think it's a magnificent effort. And I love getting on the airplane and seeing that's one of the offerings on the airplanes. And it's being shown to even secular audiences. I think it's a marvelous thing, and I love what they're doing. My own opinion of some of the way the characters are placed on it doesn't... I would rather just go over there and do it myself.
Absolutely. I agree with you, and I think The Chosen wasn't made for guys like you and I, because we're going to rip the thing to shreds, because we know enough about the biblical context.
And I love what they're doing, and Rumi and what they're doing, so I'm all in favor of it.
And these are all Bible believing and Bible loving Christians. So I want to go forward. There was something else you wanted to bring up about Peter that was very necessary for our meditation.
Well, Peter became the spokesman. He was the spokesman, and he became the bishop of Jerusalem.
Right.
It's you know, you read the fathers of the church. And a lot of people then go to Acts 15, and they say that it was James, the brother of our Lord, he's called. Now, that's another whole topic. And there could very well be stepbrothers of Jesus from Joseph having a previous... children from a marriage. That's what the whole early church believed, and the Eastern church still believes that today. Or it could be cousins. It could be the extended family.
Right.
But these guys didn't believe in Jesus. They seemed to be older than him, because in John chapter 7, when Jesus is going to Jerusalem, they say, well, why don't you go down and show yourself? Go down if you're so great. Go down. Younger brothers would never do that to an older brother. So the Protestants say Jesus is the firstborn, and then he had other younger brothers. Younger brothers would never do that, because the firstborn will someday stand in the foot sandals of his father
That's
and be
right.
at the head of the estate. So older brothers would definitely taunt a younger brother. So if Joseph had older stepsons and so on, then that would be reality. But these guys didn't. My point is that they didn't believe in Jesus. In John 7, one of his last times going up to Jerusalem. But as soon as when we get to Pentecost, we find them in the upper room.
Yeah.
We find them now believers. So the resurrection, the whole crucifixion, resurrection, it had a huge impact. They say, wow, that's Jesus. That he really was who he said he was. And so James became ultimately the bishop of Jerusalem following Peter. So Peter becomes the bishop of Antioch. And then the fathers of the church very early said that he had to be taken, because he was no longer could be just the teacher in Jerusalem. He was now the teacher of the world, because, of course, he is the first the head of the church in that sense. So he's teaching the world now, goes through Asia Minor and all the way to Rome. So when they have the discussion of, can Gentiles come into the church without being circumcised?
That's right.
The whole New Testament is about the flint knife. We should talk, sometime we should do that. Really, the whole New Testament is about a flint knife.
Mm.
All about circumcision and uncircumcision.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus even came to bring the two into one. That's why he came, it says. So anyway, that's another whole topic for another day. But when they were discussing that, James, the brother of the Lord, stood up and made the final conclusion. So they were saying Peter wasn't in charge, because he should have, if he's the Pope, he should have done that. But you've got to understand what's happening here. James is the Bishop of Jerusalem now. Peter has come back after 20 years or so, Acts 15. They all come back to deal with this issue. He's already been out. James has been the leader in Jerusalem. They all come back, and Peter explains how he was the one that brought Cornelius in, and he explains the theology behind it, and then James stands up and he quotes two authorities. He quotes the prophets, and he quotes Peter.
That's right.
And because of those two infallible authorities, they make a decision to send a letter out, and from that point on, the council closes. Gentiles do not have to be circumcised. How do we know that? Because the prophets said so, and Simon Peter said so.
Right.
Those two authorities said so, and that was letter then was sent out to all the churches, and that became binding on all the churches at that point. This is really the first ecumenical council of the church, and it was binding on everybody. The Baptists over in somewhere else didn't say, well, you know, that's the Catholic Church is saying that we're Baptists. No, there was no Baptist churches.
Right.
Billy Bob, the pastor, Baptist pastor, wasn't there. Then neither was he at the Council of Nicaea. These were Catholic bishops that were there. And that's the disciples, the apostles came back in Acts chapter 15. That was about 49 A.D. And I believe that's when Mary probably came back from Ephesus, where she was with John. She would have been about 70 years old, and that's where Mary then would have chosen to die. She wasn't sinless, but she chose. John Paul II said that she had to suffer in order to share in the resurrection of her son. She wanted to share in his death, so that she would have come back with them at that point for that council in 49 A.D. in Jerusalem. Peter stood up, and he gave the theological, infallible statement. The church then sent the message out.
My guest has been Steve Ray. We've been talking about the primacy of Peter from a few different perspectives, the crucial one being Peter's administrative prowess, that he was a master businessman, administrator, a master manager, and God used that to build upon him the church as our first pope. Thank you for joining us. I'm Marcus Peter.